another heavy wave of Russian missile attacks pound areas across Ukraine.
The air raid alarm was on from around 6 o'clock in the morning local time, and I've spent half of the night basically in the shelter myself with my family. It was another massive attack with more than 50 missiles.
Plus, the implications for Ukraine's survival as U.S. military aid for Ukraine still hangs in the balance.
Without Western air defense provision, Russia will be able to expand its air campaign much closer to NATO's borders. It's also a very dangerous idea.
And later in the program, a Ukrainian-born doctor in New York City steps up to help his colleagues in the country he once called home. Today is Monday, January 8th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Lori London. Russia launched its latest barrage of hypersonic and cruise missiles against Ukrainian targets early Monday, striking near the front lines of fighting in the east as well as central and western parts of the country. At least four people were killed in Monday's attacks, which struck a string of urban areas, including housing and a shopping mall across Ukraine. I spoke with Anna Chernikova in Kyiv for an update.
Quite a tough beginning of this 2024 new year for Ukraine. And now is the second week that we are in the new year that started with a massive attack of the Russian forces. Monday, January 8th, the air raid alarm was on from around 6 o'clock in the morning local time. And I've spent half of the night basically in the shelter myself with my family. It was another massive attack with more than 50 missiles that were targeted different regions of Ukraine. And particularly this time, the main target was where the regions in the west part of the country, the Khmelnytsky region, as well as Lviv and Ivano-Frankivsk regions. What we know at this moment that there were some hits and also the hits of the debris of the missiles. The Ukrainian armed forces confirmed that at least 18 missiles were destroyed. Those missiles are the KH type of missiles, as well as 8 drones were destroyed by the Ukrainian air defense. In total, 59 missiles were launched by the Russian forces, and some of them reached their destinations. Ukrainian Air Force and Ukrainian military confirmed that this time the main target was critical civil infrastructure, industrial and military facilities in different regions of Ukraine. The main regions that were under the attack, as I mentioned already, in the west, Khmelnytsky region, as well as in the east, Kharkiv, Dnipropetrovsk, and Zaporizhia regions.
And it sounds like despite their targeting defense industry, the attack struck a large portion of urban areas, including housing and civilian areas.
Yeah, most of the debris fall is damaging the infrastructure, the civilian infrastructure and residential areas. Also, sometimes missiles are not that precise and also can strike directly into the residential areas, into the buildings, and particularly this latest attack in Kyiv on the 2nd of January, also over the night on Monday in the western part of the country and in the eastern part of the country, also the residential areas were damaged and affected a lot because of the debris fall particularly.
Western officials had been warning that Russia may have been stockpiling for this onslaught in the winter, and it looks like that was a correct warning. How are things going on the front line, and what are the expectations? How are people feeling?
Well, situation is extremely intense. It remains intense. It was not a calm down at all. The only slight calm down in the fighting was for some time over the new year. But during this time, it was more intensified artillery fighting on the ground. So basically, we can say that it remains intense. And two hottest spots at the front line remain in the east around Avdiivka and the area, and also in the south in Kherson region. But Ukrainian officials, and not only military officials, but also experts, as well as Institute for the Study of War, actually in their latest report, all of them confirm that Russian forces reportedly might be preparing for additional assault, which will be happening in the Kharkiv region. And this is something that might be another escalation. So Ukrainian society and Ukrainian military is getting ready to that. And there are a lot of talks about this already. But Ukrainian military officials said that Ukrainian forces are preparing and have no plans to leave their defense positions in that area.
How are you and others that you know holding up as far as the, you know, the intensity of this? I would think it'd be people would be pretty fearful and on edge.
Well, people are tired indeed. Of course, especially of this overnight massive attacks, and people do not sleep enough. Half of the night or even whole night people are spending in the shelters, especially if we're talking about eastern parts of the country where shellings are more intense, as well as Khmelnytsky region recently in this recent months is one of the main regions for Russian attacks due to the location of critical infrastructure in there and also airfield in that area. So people are definitely tired, but at the same time, these attacks, I should say, you know, unite people more. And after such massive attacks, people just, you know, getting ready to, you know, fight again, fight longer, and do not give up, because the mood in Ukraine is that if people give up, then, and if military give up, then Ukraine will not exist. So people are just uniting in order to survive and to keep Ukraine alive.
Anna Chernikova reporting for VOA from Kyiv. President Joe Biden's top budget official warned Friday about the rapidly diminishing time that lawmakers have to replenish U.S. aid for Ukraine, as the fate of that money to Kyiv remains tied up in negotiations. Lawmakers are returning to Washington this week, hoping to secure a deal that would avert a government shutdown, as well as provide funding for border security in return for Ukraine aid. As future U.S. military aid for Ukraine hangs in the balance and Russia steps up its attacks, including an end-of-year bombardment of what Ukrainian officials described was Russia's largest single assault since the start of the war in February 2022. I spoke with Carlina Hurd, Russia team deputy lead with the Institute for the Study of War, for insights into what increasing Russian attacks may indicate and the implications for Ukraine's efforts going forward, potentially without U.S. military aid.
There's a couple things to think about when we're thinking about the apparent escalation, and especially the size and the types of weapons that Russia used in the December 29th attack and then in the subsequent January 2nd attack. Over the past several months, these sort of small-scale, mostly Shahed drone-based strikes have been pretty prevalent across Ukraine. On a nearly daily basis, we've seen Russian forces launch some amount of these Iranian-provided Shahed drones, but they don't really seem to be trying to hit Ukrainian targets, right? So it really seemed as though they were using these Shahed drones to probe Ukrainian air defenses and figure out what the best strike routes were. And what we saw on December 29th and then again on January 2nd was essentially the effect of months of basically experimentation and adaptation to Ukrainian air defenses, in that we saw these massive strike series that combined a smaller number of Shahed drones and then several different types of missiles, from Kinjals to Calibers to ballistic missiles such as Iskanders and S-300s, being applied in a way that was actually quite effective and very much overcame and circumvented elements of Ukrainian air defense and was able to hit critical civilian infrastructure as well as military infrastructure. And we've always assessed this escalation and that Russia uses these strike campaigns in an attempt to break Ukrainian will. And break Ukrainian will in a couple of ways. Of course, there are the psychological impacts of living in fear of these mass strikes that sometimes hit civilian buildings, residential areas, etc. But then there's also this aspect of, we know that a lot of the strikes, especially on the 29th, were targeted at Ukrainian defense industrial base complexes, areas, etc. And that's really meant to continue to discourage Western support and Western investment in the Ukrainian defense industrial base and make it kind of this risk balance calculus for the West and its continued provision of aid for Ukraine. So generally, the escalation is psychological and meant to really try to break Ukrainian will. And it's ultimately this culmination of months and months of testing and adaptation and experimentation that Russians have been doing against Ukrainian air defenses.
Ukraine's launched attacks on Russia's border in Belgorod, the biggest Russian city near the border. What do you think Ukraine's strategy was behind that?
There's always kind of the idea that Ukraine wants to posture its own strike capabilities. We've seen continued Ukrainian strikes against Black Sea Fleet assets in Crimea and the Black Sea, which have actually greatly degraded Russia's capacity to maintain control of the Black Sea. So we've seen these retaliatory strikes on the part of Ukraine, which have been very clear answers to these sorts of Russian strikes, and also just posturing Ukraine's ability to continue to defend itself and strike into Russia, which of course has psychological effects within Russia itself.
And of course, Congress has yet to approve any further military aid for Ukraine. How important is that U.S. aid for Ukraine, and can Ukraine continue to fight off Russia's invasion without it?
Yeah, so Western aid truly remains vital for Ukraine's ability to defend itself against Russian strikes, especially strike series as massive as those over the past few days. And the end of Western aid, specifically in Western air defense aid, would likely set conditions for an expanded and very devastating Russian air campaign in Ukraine. Ukrainian air defenses have been very much bolstered by Western-provided systems and missiles. And we see that when these Western-provided systems are used, they're actually used to great effect. For example, a Ukrainian commander-in-chief, Zaluzhny, noted that there was a record number of Kinjal missiles shot down on January 2nd using Patriot systems. So Patriot systems shot down 10 of the 10 launched Kinjal missiles. So this is how we really see how vital these systems are in helping Ukraine defend its own territories. As this aid runs out, and if Western air defense provisions end, Ukraine is going to have to make a decision of pulling its air defense systems closer to critical population centers and away from the front line, which of course will impact its ability to cover critical frontline areas, and that will impact ground operations in critical areas frontline. And of course, the idea that without Western air defense provision, Russia will be able to expand its air campaign much closer to NATO's borders. It's also a very dangerous idea. So ultimately, Western aid is the vital component in Ukraine's ability to repel against these air attacks.
Carolina Hurd, Russia team deputy lead with the Institute for the Study of War. Ukraine's counteroffensive has not achieved the success it had hoped for. As some analysts say, Kyiv is losing global confidence that can win the war. For analysis on that part of the story, I spoke with Stephen Pfeiffer, former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine and current non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institute.
Certainly the counteroffensive in the summer did not succeed, so you cannot say Ukraine is winning the war. But if you look at now, in January of 2024, how much territory Russia occupies of Ukraine, and compare that to what the Russians occupied in January of 2023, there's not much difference. And Russia occupies much less Ukrainian territory today than they occupied in the summer of 2022. So there's a big question now as the Ukrainians are shifting over towards defense. There still seems to be some war weariness in Ukraine, but a real determination to continue to resist, defend their country. And the big question right now really, I think, hangs on the United States and Europe. Can the United States and Europe supply the Ukrainians with the means to defend themselves? And hopefully that gets resolved when Congress comes back. And I very much hope that Congress does the right thing and votes through the aid package for Ukraine.
How important for Ukraine is U.S. military aid? How vital is it?
The things that they need, artillery shells, they need air defense missiles. Those things are important. And if the United States does not provide that assistance, I believe that some of the European countries will continue to provide assistance. But the European countries cannot make up for the capacity that would vanish if the United States stopped assisting Ukraine. So U.S. assistance is very important in giving the Ukrainians the means now to defend themselves. And my guess is the Ukrainians, in fact, President Zelensky talked about it a few weeks ago, shifting towards a defensive strategy. And the defensive strategy will be easier for them to sustain than a counteroffensive. And then hopefully, while they're defending, they can build up a capability for some kind of a new counteroffensive. But it's going to be very hard for them to do any of that if the U.S. assistance is not there.
And what could the implications be?
I think the Ukrainians are pretty determined. I mean, remember back in February of 2022, when there wasn't much U.S. or Western military going to Ukraine, you had images coming all over of Ukraine of people putting together Molotov cocktails. And if it comes down to that, I think some Ukrainians are prepared to fight with Molotov cocktails. But the military situation becomes much more grim for Ukraine if all of a sudden they run out of artillery shells, they run out of air defense missiles, and they're fighting a Russia which has ramped up its military production over the past year.
There were reports that Vladimir Putin may be interested in a ceasefire, but then, of course, we saw the horrific attacks following that report. And we had heard from him stating very convincingly that he has the same goal as when he started, quote, to denazification of Ukraine. It doesn't appear that he will stop until he has to.
Putin has said he's open to negotiation, but then he says on Russian terms. And that means that Ukraine would have to accept the loss of Crimea. Ukraine would have to accept the loss of Zaporizhia, Kherson, Donetsk, and Luhansk provinces. Even though the Russian military today does not occupy all of those territories, Ukraine would have to accept demilitarization, which would make Ukraine a walkover for any future Russian invasion, and denazification, which means the replacement of the current Ukrainian government. So I think Putin is signaling he's prepared to negotiate on Ukraine's capitulation. He's not prepared to compromise, and one should not be surprised that the Ukrainians are not prepared to take up that offer.
Even if they were to agree to do that, how likely would it be that it would even lead to a permanent peace? They tried that before when they gave up Crimea.
That's the big question. I mean, if there's any kind of a ceasefire, how do we know that it's not simply giving the Russians time to regroup and prepare for a new attack? And it's not just the government. I mean, the resolution of Ukrainians to continue to fight is also the public. I mean, if President Zelensky decided that he would be prepared to accept a ceasefire in place, I don't think he could sell that to the population. The Ukrainian population, polls show, still are pretty determined to win back their territory. And so I look at the possibility when people say ceasefire, you know, one, I don't think the Russians are seriously interested in a ceasefire except one that allows them to basically win all their terms. And two, the Ukrainians, you know, see no advantage in that. So unfortunately, I think this war is going to continue for some time to come. And it seems to me that the contest is which runs out first. Does the impact of sanctions, but more importantly, the impact of just this steady flow of Russian soldiers coming home in body bags, does that erode the will of the Russian elite and the Russian public to continue the war before running out of bullets and artillery shells erodes Ukraine's ability to continue the war? And that's where the United States and the West have a say. We can keep the Ukrainians armed.
But since when does the Russian public ever have a say in anything that happens in their country?
You know, it's interesting to me. Over the last 23 years, Putin has built a very autocratic system in Russia. The Kremlin still does a lot of polling. They track public attitudes. And, you know, I wonder what the Kremlin would do if all of a sudden they saw the population just going sour on the war. Now, is that a high probability it would change the Kremlin? I don't think so, but I think there is some chance that if they begin to see the public really conclude that this war is too costly, that in fact might cause a change in how the Kremlin approaches it. That probably doesn't happen, though, this year. Vladimir Putin, I think, is playing to see, first of all, what happens in the American presidential election. He probably believes that if Donald Trump returns to the White House, then American assistance to Ukraine ends and his military goals become much easier to achieve.
Stephen Pfeiffer, former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine and current non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institute. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. Ukraine's president says his country can defeat Russian aggression with continued and expanding Western support. This as Russia's invasion of its neighbor is set to enter a third year. VOA's Arash Arbasadi has more.
Rescue workers in the Ukrainian city of Dnipro fight fires following a Russian drone strike Saturday. Ukraine's Air Force issued a statement on its Telegram channel saying overnight it destroyed 21 of Russia's 28 attack drones, without mentioning three cruise missiles also launched in the assault. VOA cannot independently verify the report, but Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says only with increased cooperation can Russian aggression be defeated.
To create an arsenal for the defense of freedom, Europe needs joint weapons production. Much larger scale production than now. We see that Russia's aggressive ambitions can be stopped only where there is sufficient strength to stop them. And we will provide such strength only together.
Zelensky echoing Ukraine's defense industry head from late last year.
Now we're refocusing on making Ukraine the arsenal of the free world. We are focusing on producing all types of weapons and ammunition, and we show that we can test it on the battlefield and make it better during the war. That's something we can contribute to the free world.
In the closing days of 2023 and so far this year, Russia deployed nearly 300 missiles and more than 200 drones in attacks on Ukraine. And while Russia has relied on Iran for many of its drones, Ukrainian investigators and the White House say Russia recently began using North Korean-supplied ballistic missiles in attacks across Ukraine, a move described as a major escalation. Russia and North Korea deny the partnership. That doesn't mean that Russia abandoned its own missile systems, however, as Zelensky said Moscow fired its conventional S-300 missiles into Ukraine's Donetsk region, killing at least 11, nearly half of them children. Rescue efforts are ongoing. With Russia's invasion of Ukraine nearly entering a third year, Kyiv continues its push for material support while urging its Western partners to consider it a hub of Allied weapon production. Arash Arabasadi, VOA.
Residents of Russia-controlled regions of Ukraine celebrated Orthodox Christmas on Sunday. Russian state TV showed people attending Christmas services, but Ukraine, which is a predominantly Orthodox country, officially observed Christmas this year as a public holiday on December 25th due to a change enacted in legislation signed by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in July. And since the start of Russia's invasion, the Ukrainian healthcare system has been under tremendous stress. Thousands of people have filled hospitals with battle-related injuries. As VOA's Johnny Fernandez reports, a Ukrainian-born doctor in New York City has been stepping up to help his medical peers in the country he once called home.
The images of war-torn Ukraine are heartbreaking for Odessa-born Dr. Alex Moroz, the director of one of New York University Langone Hospital's physical residency programs. Program director, Alex Moroz.
I grew up there, and then I moved to U.S. and got my training and made my life here and became American. But as it turned out, I never really left here.
In 2023, he started the prosthetics observership at NYU Langone Health after learning the Ukrainian healthcare system was completely overwhelmed. Its doctors desperately needed more training on treating battlefield type of wounds, training his program now provides. Program director, Alex Moroz.
The main focus of their two-week training has been on limb loss, prosthetics and rehabilitation, and also care of complex fractures, because with the modern blast injuries that they're unfortunately seeing, they have a very high number of patients who lost limbs.
The program is sponsored by American nonprofit organizations. Its goal is to bring Ukrainian medical professionals to New York City and teach them the skills that they would apply back home. Ukrainian Dr. Valentina Savich is one of the three participants in this round of training. All the medical professionals learn how to work with prosthetics, a growing need in Ukraine. Participant of Observer, Ukrainian Dr. Valentina Savich.
A lot of fractures, a lot of different types of injuries that I haven't seen previously, and I want to get some experience of this and to understand how to work with them.
Savage says the program opened her eyes to new ways of treating soldiers and patients that are affected by the Russian invasion in Ukraine. During the 2 weeks, visiting professionals not only learn about the latest biotechnology associated with prosthetics, but also receive training in helping the wounded to cope with mental traumas associated with the ongoing conflict. Participant of Observer, Ukrainian Dr. Valentina Savich.
It's a really great experience for me because I work with a patient that has gotten amputations during the war. I haven't learned this in the university. That's why I try to find every resource of information for improving my work, improving my knowledge.
Savich and Moroz both believe this program is one way to rebuild their beloved country. Participant of Observer, Ukrainian Dr. Valentina Savich.
I even can't explain this feeling because it's like something warm here because you see the other people that have done their best to develop themselves as a professional, and the community here is unbelievable.
Despite living on the opposite sides of the Atlantic, both doctors believe Ukraine will move forward to brighter days. Johnny Fernandez, VOA News, New York.
And that that'll do it for us today, but stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, be sure and follow VOA News. On behalf of all of us here at VOA, thank you so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Lori London.